The WCLT Radio Group presents your hometown podcast.
I'm Peter Tripp, Executive Director of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Licking and Perry Counties.
And I'm Jennifer Utrevis, Executive Director of Licking and Perry Counties.
And I'm WCLT's Graham Campbell. After 17 years with Big Brothers and Big Sisters, Jennifer Utrevis is coming to the end of her term as Executive Director, and it was recently announced that Peter Tripp will be taking over for her at the end of June.
What jumped off the page when you saw Peter's paper come across your desk?
I think she said it was my good looks.
Oh, you sent a picture.
That's what I said. When I saw his background, I said, this is amazing. Because there's so many things when I didn't know when I came in. And you have 100 days of training. They call it 100 days of training. Well, you're learning this, and I was learning about lawsuits and other things. But when I saw his background, he has it. He has it. He knows how to run an operation. He's been successful at it. He's a speaker. He gives conferences. He can do it. So I thought, well, I could leave right away because he really doesn't need me. But basically, he's got the background, and he's got the personality to work with people. And that's what it takes. And we are at the precipice right now of being able to expand, and that's why we needed somebody like this. So we're very glad that he is with us right now. We need to grow the base. I would like to say how many different schools I have sitting on my desk calling during COVID and after COVID saying, we need help. How do we start a program here? So you're going to hear more of our stories, more of what we're doing, more engagement as we go on. And Pete, with his knowledge of Big Brothers Big Sisters of America and of working and doing small agencies before, he knows how to make things happen. So we're really excited.
Why Licking County?
Yeah. I certainly hadn't thought about coming back to Big Brothers Big Sisters. I was pretty happy doing the other things that I was doing in terms of raising money. And I happened to see our article back, I think it was December, that they were interviewing Jennifer, and she was talking about how the community had rallied around some of the darkest hours for the organization, and how she was very confident that we were really at that point to be able to go to the next level, to build upon all the good things that the community has helped us to do up to this point. And that's kind of been, I think that's what keeps me inspired, Graham, to keep going, is about being able to build and to be able to create new opportunities for more people. And it seemed as though Licking and Perry County is there, and we have an opportunity. It's not like we have to come in and do a lot of repair to then be able to move forward. We're ready to move forward, and that's exciting. And as she spoke, and as through the interview process, board members speaking about their passion for the mission, and again, how supportive the community is when they know what needs to be done to make the world better for kids. I thought, this is a great opportunity. I hope to bring some skills. I'm also going to learn. It's very important for me to meet people in the community and really understand the landscape of the community. So that's going to require some extra work on my part to do that. But I hope to gain the same level of trust that the community has given Jennifer as we move forward, because we're all pulling in the same direction to make sure our kids have a better life.
Why Big Brothers Big Sisters? What brought you to them?
Well, initially I started as a big brother. Uh-huh. I never expected to begin to have a career as a nonprofit executive, but it happened that the organization was having some issues, and they were looking for someone with a business acumen to come in and try to turn things around. And why, as a big brother, I realized the impact we had on the lives of children, and that there are so many kids that just don't have enough adults taking an active interest in who they are and where they're going. So that has stayed with me my entire career, and to come back to the passion to be able to help so many kids that we know in any size community that need the services, and be able to connect volunteers from the community to those kids is really a gift.
Jennifer, what brought you, if I recall correctly, you also came out of a business background.
Exactly. But I was lucky enough to be working with the chamber at the time. And in the year 2000, I was chairman of the chamber. So I worked with the business community all the time that I was with Granville Inn. And I was with Granville Inn for 27 years. What brought me to this was the passion of the agency. And they were going through a very hard time. And my thought was, an agency cannot go down when it has such a wonderful mission that helps so many kids. And I share the passion that Peter has for the kids and the kids that need help, and that's what we do at Big Brothers Big Sisters. We bring out their potential and make them see that there is a future out there.
For more than 100 years, Big Brothers Big Sisters has been changing children's lives by matching them with caring adults who guide them on a path to success. I ask what kind of time and background an adult volunteer might need.
If you're doing what we would call a school-based program or an after-school, it can be anything from I don't know, you have to help me out here, but typically there's 60 minutes in duration.
About an hour.
But it's the consistency of being there every week on that day to see the child and find out what's going on in their lives. So that's one thing. It could be as little as an hour. When we talk about community-based matches, those are matches where the activities happen more in the community and typically takes a little more time to do. It's tough to go out into the community to drive to where you're going and do it in an hour, so you're taking a few hours of time perhaps on a weekly or a semi-weekly basis. Or they may get together for a little longer period of time but do it once a month. But it's the consistency and continuing to stay in contact that's really, really important.
I should ask this question on behalf of those who are wondering about being an expert in the new math. Is that helping homework? Is that still a part of what is expected here?
Well, I think part of the beauty of the matching process is matching what kids specifically need with what a volunteer can bring to the table. And there's certainly, thank goodness, there are folks out there who can do the new math. I'm not one of them, Graham, so they're not going to make that match for me. But I think that's a part of it, is what do you have to bring to the table? There's some kids that just, they have no one helping them figure out what they want to do when they grow up. And somebody may have a very interesting job, a job the kid never thought about. And he said, I can take him to work with me on a Saturday and show them what I do. Introduce them to other people in my profession who are doing different stuff. I think that's an example. They're kind of two extremes there. There's certainly some of it is about just the value of education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, helping kids, have you done your homework? And do you need help with my homework? Yeah, I need help with my new math. Okay, that's not me. let's go talk. Let's go talk to your teacher about how we make that happen for mm-hmm. you. I think those are kind of examples of again, you're constantly advocating on behalf of that child. And our matching process is to make sure that we're matching folks who, what you bring to the table is what the kid needs, and there's a compatibility there so that everybody's comfortable with where we're going, not trying to put that square peg in a round hole.
Some of the children participating in the Big Brothers Big Sisters program have grown up in less than ideal circumstances. I asked if it was the responsibility of the adult volunteers to directly address that reality.
I would say in terms of again, advocating for the safety of children is. I mean, that's part of the training process that our volunteers go through, what to look for. Now, is it their job to fix that? No. Is it their job to identify potential issues that could be harmful to a child and bring that to our attention? Yeah, that's what we would expect. Otherwise, we would be having social workers and psychologists and other folks would be the only volunteers. But it's, we all as adults have a keen eye for what seems right and what seems inappropriate or is a concern to us. And so from that perspective, I would say that's the role of, as would any adult friend for a child, would be advocating on their behalf and keeping an eye out for their welfare. The same thing's happening with the child and their family. Find out about them, what's going on, are there any risk factors? So we try to find out as much information as we can so we can make the best match that we possibly can. But each of our volunteers in our matches have a match specialist. It's somebody that's their person. That's their go-to person. Not sure what to do. They have a concern. Or they want somebody to tell something great about that just happened. That's their match support specialist that they would be talking with about that. So that's their advocate, if you will, in terms of the work they're doing as a volunteer.
So just to put too fine a point on it, then anybody who comes to you as a prospective volunteer is not going to be turned loose on their match without necessary supports to address whatever might come up.
Absolutely, absolutely. That person is there when they need them. And I think it's, and we all at different times need perhaps something different from our match support specialist. And I think they're very attuned to that. They know the strengths of the volunteer. Some of us kind of say, okay, you be there when I need you, but I'm good. And others are maybe a little tentative in terms of what I should do. What kind of activities? What do we talk about? And those are the things that I think a match support specialist can really help with at both ends of that spectrum.
I think that's one of the things that that people don't know about Big Brothers Big Sisters that, are just coming in, that the match support specialist is like a case manager that follows us through. What's the problem that the little's having? What's the problem the big's having? What's the problem the guardian's having? These are all connected in the match support specialist, and they've got a key job of trying to keep things together and everybody happy in that relationship.
What do you think makes a good big?
Mm-hmm. I think one is you have to like kids. You have to want to be around kids. You have to understand kids. And, sometimes they don't – any of us who have our own children, they don't always behave the way we want them to behave. But we care about them unconditionally. And I think that ability to see kids, to see the good in them, the possibilities, I think is a really important thing. If somebody looks at it as being a chore or they're doing it for a reason other than wanting to see that particular child – benefit, then I think that they probably should do something else, give blood, do something that's also equally important in our community. I think that's a really important piece of it. The other is being able to make a commitment. I've always said when I would make speeches to groups about becoming Big Brothers or Big Sisters is that, make that child one of the top five priorities in your life. It's not going to be the first, not going to be the second. You've got your family, you've got your work, you've got perhaps where you worship. It may be something else there, but at least be in the top five. And if you can't say that, then perhaps there's some other way that you help your community. But I think that it's really having the time to do it, which it doesn't take as much time as people think, but willingness to include that child in what they are all about. Really important piece. And the unconditional concern and care is a really big piece because, as we all know, it's not getting any easier to grow up as a child. And knowing that you have somebody who unconditionally cares about you but yet is showing you a potential path, I think, is just so critical. But you have to be able to be able to do that and also be very comfortable in saying, I can make the time. And I would suggest to you that most Big Brother and Big Sister volunteers are busy people, but they see the importance of it, and so they make that child a priority.
It's all about passion and telling the story. You could tell a million stories, and it really gets to that person that says, yes, I could be that person that helps that kid. Or, yes, I heard that this happened because he was helped at school. Or they just want to get involved. Or it's like the doctor that says to us after they've been at lunch buddies, all the time I have been a doctor and I loved what I did, but the kids didn't love me. Now when I leave and I hear the kids say, Doc, I wish you could come every day. And then as I go out the door, he says, I love you, Doc. He says, that has never happened to me before. When you hear the passion of so many kids, and since we've been shut down through COVID with our school-based matches and are just opening them up and getting them going, when you hear how much they need this one-on-one attention, the surveys just came back across my desk last night that said all the people that we were asking, do you want to go virtual with your match? And they said, no, we want it one-to-one. This kid needs that. Mm-hmm. So we're out to not only tell our story, but get more people involved.
Trying to focus on the let's say, less mission-oriented functions of running an operation like raising money, for example, is always hard to get buy-in from volunteers, and in some cases, unfortunately, staff members, because they think we're focused on mission, we're delivering to our clients, and this other stuff is over there, and other people take care of it. How do you bring those two things together?
Well, again, if we don't steward our resources well, if we don't ensure that we have the infrastructure to do it well, which is how we keep staff motivated, is it's by the product. It's by providing the services to the kids that they know that they need. But we can only do that if we're raising money properly, we're spending that money properly, and we're building infrastructure that allows us to continue and sustain that.
Uh-huh. What do you think the greatest challenges are for continuing to deliver a quality product, in this mm-hmm. case, services to your littles, and bring new, for lack of a better term, investments in the organization?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think it's about relationship, Graham. Jennifer has created some amazing relationships in the community, so we have friends and we have donors and stakeholders who are committed. And they all have spheres of influence. Uh-huh. There are many folks in the community that may have heard the brand name, but don't really know what we do and why it matters. And so I think being very aggressive in terms of being out and meeting people, having a marketing plan, if you will, in terms of letting people know what we do and why it does matter to kids, but then also matters to the community, I think is a really important piece to that. Uh-huh. Also, we have to be very, you know, I think very specific in terms of how we spend our dollars and very transparent about that, uh-huh. so that folks can really see their, you know, their gift or investment in our mission, how it's coming back to the community and making a difference. So I think that's a challenge, but I think it's one that we're up for. Our board is very engaged, and the stakeholders and donors that I've met already are saying, what's next, Pete? What's next? We're ready. Let's go. That's exciting.
The internet has made it possible for people to support nonprofit organizations like Big Brothers and Big Sisters from the comfort of their couch, but it's also made it easy for them to not be directly engaged with the organizations they're supporting. I asked about the challenge and the opportunity that this presents.
It's like any business. You know, you have to have different streams of revenue coming in, and I think it's a combination of that. There are folks in our community who what will resonate is giving online, mm-hmm. At a certain amount. There are other folks in the community who want to be able to know that their gift immediately is creating change. And those are probably the donors who have the ability to give it a larger sum. And I think there's room for both, but we have to create the relationships in a way. I gave to an organization just recently that their mission I really care about. And I wasn't able to give large dollars, but I gave what was large for me. Mm-hmm. And I never got a thank you. I never got a phone call that said, gee, thanks, Pete, for your gift. We know now you've given for 10 years in a row. I think that kind of mindset and that kind of intentionality with nonprofits, and certainly continuing what Big Brothers Big Sisters has started in doing that, is you create, you maintain, and you sustain relationships. So the people, you're always putting the donor at whatever level in the center of what you're doing and letting them know why it matters. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important thing to do. And certainly it can be a disconnect unless you're very intentional about how you maintain relationship and connection with people, mm-hmm. No matter what avenue they give through. And while we all appreciate the large gifts that are invested in our mission, I think we forget how important the $25 gifts are. If we have 1,000 people giving $25, we have $25,000, which can be invested in us doing more and sustaining that. And I think we sometimes people think if I can't write the big check, that there's not a place for me. And I can assure you, in my experience, it's been those $25 donations that add up, and you get more and more people. You create that army, if you will, mm-hmm. an army of 1,000 who give it $25. Makes a real difference to a nonprofit like ours. So I just, mm-hmm. I would hope that people would understand that and not feel as though their smaller gift is unappreciated or is not needed, because it is.
And I want to say one thing. We just had our Bowl for Kids. And Bowl for Kids, we beat all expectations that we thought. We think we're going to total 127,000 when it's all in. And it was amazing after being down for 2 years, and the passion and the enthusiasm, that's what it takes. And this community rallies around need. They really do. I have been so fortunate to work all these years in looking in Perry County.
So you think there's still a role for the traditional special event kind of?
I do. I think both for kids' sake, $127,000 in our size county is pretty amazing.
Uh-huh.
But two things happen. One is that that's amazing money uh-huh. that we can invest. But secondly, new friends and sustaining relationships. If you had been at the bowling house, Graham, you know, people were hugging and they were laughing and they were talking about Big Brothers Big Sisters and they wanted to know what was the date for the next year.
Mm-hmm.
I think it creates and maintains that connection we were just talking about, as well as raising money.
Mm-hmm.
In talking with people who work in the human services space, they're quick to try and describe their work in terms of numbers. So many people served. Numbers of dollars spent in order to achieve a particular result. What struck me about talking to my guests was that the first thing they talk about is stories. They talk about people who have been impacted by the services they provide. And I wondered if the story was more important than the number, individual life impacted more important than charts and graphs and spreadsheets.
I think it's a combination, Graham. I think that the numbers are important. You know, Jennifer can talk more about, you know, what's kind of gotten us to where we're at today. What we know as a result of COVID, you know, that took a toll on relationships, right, in terms of personal face-to-face kind of relationships. So we know we can serve a lot more kids, and we want to talk about that. But I do think outcome, the difference that it's making in folks' lives, whether, you know, if we're doing it for one, that's good. Yeah, sure. Do we want to do it for 1,000? Absolutely do. So I think that there's a combination of those. So I think as we create our plan, our vision for the future, there's going to be a lot of numbers in that. I'm a numbers guy in terms of I want to be able to measure what we do. But, you know, we could serve 1,000 kids, and if we weren't changing their lives for the better, is that good use of our resources? So I think it's a combination of sharing those two things. And we know that I think the staff and Jennifer have done a stellar job of being able to maintain and sustain matches during a really, really tough period. But we also know there are many, many more kids out there. And we know there's a whole lot of folks from the community who want to help. We just have to give them a path to figure out how they can work through Big Brothers Big Sisters to make it happen. So, long answer to a short question, but I think it's a combination of the two, and I think you'll continue to see and hear from us sharing both of those together, because they're not isolated pieces of information. They need to really be kind of come together and align in terms of the message and the story of Big Brothers Big Sisters.
And all the information you were asking about numbers, we have to go get grants, like how many kids have you served, and what was the length of match, and we have all these things. We also have all the information about how they've improved in school. At the end of the year, we take these questionnaires and how they've improved in socially, how they've improved in attitude, how they've improved in school, and we put these together. The National gets all these. So do we have those statistics? Yes, we do. At one time, we were number one in the Midwest of the amount of kids we served on our budget. And I'm telling you, it's very interesting when you go around and see what we do with the dollar and how many we served. Yes, we were crushed. We were up to 550 before this happened with COVID. But when this happened, we were expecting the best year ever. And then when they shut us down, it blew the numbers down to 300 and then way down last year. So we're rebuilding, and we're going to be there by the end of December, not quite up to 500, but we'll be at least to 3. But we have all the statistics on how we manage our money, the cost per match, everything that goes into making us a quality agency with Big Brothers Big Sisters of America.
This is a long-term investment you're making in the kids of looking at Perry Counties. So how do you feed that back to a prospective donor? How do you show them that 10, 15, or 20 years from now, the work they've put in today is going to pay off?
Yeah, that's probably one of the more difficult things in terms of, you know, not many organizations can afford to do longitudinal studies. I think that's where being a part of a national organization, where they have, you know, longer tentacles to be able to reach out. They've done some surveys of littles who became adults and were successful, and asked them questions about the roles that a big brother or big sister played in helping them get there. And a very high percentage of those folks who responded were saying, yes, I'm where I'm at today because my big brother or big sister helped me get there. So that's one way, is that we have, you know, we have a broader group of folks to be able to say this is what we're seeing. But I think in terms of locally, it's about what are kind of the kind of outcomes we're seeing over the time that a young person is with us. You know, is there improvement in school? Is there improvement in their confidence? Are they staying out of trouble? So we try to measure all of those things and know kind of where a kid is at any given point. Now, we were at Bowl for Kids' Sake a few weeks ago, and I met a gentleman who still stays in touch with his little brother, who is now an adult and a very successful adult. We had no idea. He just happened to bring that up in conversation, and I thought, there's all those stories out there. So it's one of the things we'll be reaching out to the community and saying, hey, if you were a little brother or sister, or you're in touch with a big brother or big sister who is an adult now, let us know how it's going, so that we can have hopefully be able to share some stories that are more locally focused on what that difference has made. So that's the, you know, it's not never an easy thing. So, you know, we can certainly measure kind of immediately or what over a short period of time is happening for kids in terms of success. The longitudinal is a little more difficult, and that's why I'm very pleased that we're a part of a national organization that can help us collect that kind of information.
I guess more broadly, I feel responsible to ask about challenges facing nonprofits.
Well, I think, you know, we're in a period of time when the whole subject of diversity and inclusion and social justice is coming to the surface. It's always been an issue, but I think it's probably more prevalent in our minds than it ever has. And I think I'm a big proponent of diversity and inclusion, and so I'm hoping that, you know, we as an organization make sure that we're being very have an eye on being sure that we're serving kids from many different backgrounds who need what we have to offer, but also that we're reaching out to the community in a very diverse manner to include them, that they feel like as though we want to hear their voice, that there's a place for them with Big Brothers Big Sisters to be a part of the solution as well. So I'm big on task forces and committees who get together and share ideas and look at us critically. We need to be very transparent, and there's no business that doesn't have good, bad, and ugly. And I think it's important that the community see that, because it's the bad and the ugly that they can help us get better at. And so, you know, it's that continuous improvement model, right? But you can't do that if we're doing it through a very narrow lens with folks who are a part of our organization coming from very narrow backgrounds. We need to really expand and broaden that. And I think that's a challenge across the nonprofit world, wherever. And really important that be an important pillar, if you will, in our work. So as we go into fall and looking at creating a new strategic plan, that has to have a real important piece, so that it's not something we check off a list, but it's something that really ingrain in the culture of our organization, that those are of high importance and that we're evaluating constantly. Are we reaching out to the community, everyone who should have a chance to participate, either as a receiving our services or helping us give the services or creating the space for us to be successful?
What do you look for in a board member?
Well, I think some of it has to do with the evolution of the organization, kind of where you're at. I will tell you that I think in this day and age, we need a mix of board members who are entrepreneurs, who are calculated risk takers, because in this environment, we have to be willing, you know, look at Central Ohio and the number of startups that we have and are being very successful. We, I think, as nonprofits have to be willing to look at new ways to do business, new ways to raise money, new ways to engage other folks. So I think that's part of it. You want that those folks who have that mentality coming on, but you also need folks who have are fiscally conservative, who really are watching the bottom line and are making sure that Jennifer and I are watching the bottom line. I think those are two pieces that are really important. A change that I've seen in nonprofit boards in terms of their role has been the ambassadorship piece. For very often, board members they were looking at the budget, they were doing all kinds of wonderful things like that, but they weren't out in the community really vocalizing why they're involved with a mission. And encouraging the folks in what I call their spheres of influence, the people that they know and care about them and vice versa. I think that's an important role, that folks are willing to be very vocal about their participation in a nonprofit, specifically Big Brothers Big Sisters. And I can tell you we have a board who does that. And what happens then, you get new friends when they find out why they're involved. But I do think, you know, one of the things we're going to be working on is the vision. What's the vision moving ahead? What do we maintain that we've done, but what do we have to change? So that's going to require smart business people, but also folks who have a real passion for what we do. And we're going to have input from people who receive our services in terms of families, as well as folks who have been Big Brothers and Big Sisters. So I think there's a room for all of that. And when you say board, there's the governing board of directors, but also there's all kinds of task forces and committees that folks can get involved in. So we're constantly getting new information and information that's relevant to where we're going and how we're going to get there.
Jennifer, have you ever found it a challenge to bring people onto your board?
No. In fact, I have a challenge. They don't want to leave. but that's wonderful. But basically, no. And I think it's selling them on the mission, selling them on what we do, seeing the changes in the kids and their attitudes and just what they learn. Not learn, but what they observe and what they see. There's a chance out there. They don't have to be stuck in whatever they're stuck in, you know, and there is light at the end of the tunnel. So, you know, you get so excited. We end our board meetings with a success story all the time, and it keeps the board motivated. But the board really has the passion, and we have never found a problem. We are always looking for new and young people, and if people, we have some that are going off the board this year. So, yes, we would welcome people that want to get involved with kids to come our way and let us know.
I asked about the challenge and opportunity presented by the arrival of Intel in Licking County.
I'm probably a little too new to give you a definitive answer to that, Graham, but I would say in talking with some stakeholders from the organization and from the donors, we know that we have to position ourselves as a change maker in the community. And I hope that we're a part of committees and groups that are kind of looking at how does this opportunity and this challenge, how is it going to affect us, and how do we have to position ourselves, and how do we have to behave moving forward to take the greatest advantage of this. And I suspect that every nonprofit in Licking County is saying, okay, you know, what do we have to do? What do we have to message? Who do we need to talk to, right? There's all these things. Mm-hmm. And I think they're really, for us, which is certainly I feel is an advantage, is that our stakeholders and our board members are folks who really understand the economics and the political impact that this is going to have. So I think that's going to help us to make sure we're positioning ourselves as the community itself is positioning itself to take advantage of this and to minimize the challenges that it's going to create.
Certainly a transformational moment.
Absolutely is, which is, for me, is very exciting coming in new and being at a point where, as organizationally, we want to create the new vision. That has to be a piece of our thinking and how we're going to do this. So, yeah.
I asked Jennifer what it felt like coming to the end of her time with the organization as its executive director.
Well, it's been a great ride, because when I think of where we started, and as I leave, I couldn't be more proud of where we've come, the people we've served, and the board that we've had, and the people that have supported us. And now to have somebody with vision joining us, I can't say that, I have no regrets and only a lot of praise for what's going to happen in the future.
So what's next for you?
I'll let you know in another year.
I do have her on speed dial. I would just hope that the community at large would keep their eye open. They're going to hear more and more about us. And if they have questions or their concerns about how we're doing business, I'd like them to share that with us. We're transparent. We want to hear from folks. We only get better by looking at how we align with what's happening in our community. So I just would really invite folks to call us, visit us, get their thoughts to us, because we're not throwing any ideas away. We're putting them all together and seeing which of those that make the most sense now and what will make sense in the future. So I just invite the community to be a part of what I think is going to be a great adventure.
Outstanding. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hear the full uncut interview on our Hometown Podcast page at WCLT.com. Brought to you by Licking Knox Goodwill and the WCLT Radio Group.